Welcome to At the Organ, a weekly show about the classical organ and its music, heard on organlive.com every Sunday or streaming from our website anytime. Just point your browser to attheorgan.com for more information. Now, let's hear what's happening this week at the organ.
Hello, and thanks for joining me today on At the Organ. My name is Brent Johnson, and at the end of last week's show, I announced that we had intended to have organist and professor Jerry Hancock on today's show. However, Dr. Hancock had just a few days earlier canceled his visit to St. Louis, which included a masterclass, a recital at the St. Louis Cathedral Basilica, and a visit with us. Just a couple of hours after we finished recording last week's show, I got a phone call informing me that Dr. Hancock had passed away in the hospital in Austin, Texas, with his wife and daughters by his side. At the age of 77, Dr. Hancock has been a brightly shining light on the stage of American church music for many years. He is most notably associated with St. Thomas Church in New York City, where he served as organist and master of choristers for more than 30 years. He was known among the best concert organists in this country and had an incredible talent for improvisation. In fact, his performance here in St. Louis last week was to have included a four-movement improvised organ symphony. A native Texan, Hancock graduated from the University of Texas at Austin and then attended Union Theological Seminary in New York. From there, he went to Paris, where his teachers included Nadia Boulanger and Jean Langlais. Back in the U.S., he served as organist and choirmaster of Christ Church Cathedral in Cincinnati and St. Bartholomew's Church in New York before being hired at St. Thomas Church. In 2004, Hancock returned to Texas as professor of organ and sacred music at the University of Texas. Our own Bruce Ludwig is a recent graduate of the program there, so this week he and I sat down, and we talked about his experiences with Jerry Hancock. I started by asking him how he decided to go to Austin to study there.
I was organ and music ed double major at West Virginia University, where I studied as an undergraduate. And I had worked with my own teacher there, Bill Haller, for quite some time, who was a very fine teacher and performer, and had a chance to do summer study with David Craighead at Duquesne, which was also a great experience. But when I was looking at grad schools, it was actually a wonderful opportunity because as a high schooler, I had heard the Hancock's recordings at St. Thomas and thought that they were just fantastic. And I fell in love with the music and wanted to study with him very badly. But of course, at that time, it was not really possible because he was at St. Thomas Church full time and had, I think, curtailed his teaching some even at Juilliard. The traditional sound of a choir of men and boys was very wonderful, but I guess one of the things I thought was they sounded, you know, somewhat like the English choirs of that genre, but there was something really very American about it. And I think that was a lot of Jerry in the sound, because he had a very definite idea of what he wanted from the boys and from the men. It really, I think, got it out of them. And so, you know, there was just a characteristic way of doing the psalms in particular that was very beautiful. It always sounded like there was a lot of emphasis on the verbs and things that kept the text moving along, and I thought that that was just really excellent. Also, of course, there is their style of accompaniment too, which is as Jerry himself said not too long ago, is very American. Lots going on, so that was very attractive. A lot of text painting, things like that, and so that was really fun to hear, I think, to someone who was from a rural area and never really had heard any music like that. And so when I was looking at schools, then suddenly the year before I was set to apply for things, they left St. Thomas for the Texas program to begin the sacred music program in Texas. So of course, I was thrilled that that was a possibility, and so I applied and got in, and it was wonderful. It was really a joy meeting them when I first went down for my audition, and then after I got there, they were like parents to all their students, very kind, congenial, and everything everyone always expects the Hancocks to be. There was a pre-existing program. It's the program that Dr. Hancock started out in, along with a couple other extremely well-known organists, Kathleen Thomerson, and then also Joyce Jones from Baylor. They were all in school together at UT under Dean Doty's tutelage. And over time, the teachers had changed. Dean Doty retired, and Frank Speller was there, kept the program going. But perhaps more in a straight organ performance mold. And so the Hancocks were charged by Dr. Chandler, who's in charge of the School of Music at UT, starting a real sacred music curriculum. The program itself was very comprehensive. You could choose to do only organ, but with the Hancocks there, I mean, it would be very hard not to do the sacred music emphasis, as it's called there. And so you had an applied instrument, which for most people was organ, although we did have some choral conducting people as well. And then you would have various classes in service playing, also in conducting, in service planning, and improvisation, of course, and along with your applied lessons, and then a lot of requirement courses as well for the school, which were actually wonderful because one of the big surprises to me when I got to UT was that the faculty at the school was so good. You know, of course, the Hancocks needed no introduction, but it was a wonderful surprise to get there and find out that there was a great faculty, especially in the areas that would help out someone interested in organ and choral music. There was a real, even holistic approach, I guess, to church music on the part of the Hancocks. They really wanted us to be prepared for wherever we would go. It wasn't at all Anglican-centric or anything like that, as you might expect. But one of Jerry's great gifts was working within that particular person's tradition and helping to bring out the best gifts. One of the things that I enjoyed as a Roman Catholic working with him was his openness to Catholic forms of music and his interest in their preservation, too. Of course, he did a lot of that music at St. Thomas, but also, you know, he was a big promoter of learning chant and the Gregorian notation, that everyone be able to read that. Also, that we really make that the focus of our improvisations if we're playing for a mass or something like that. He was just a wonderful person to work with one-on-one, and of course was just a veritable cornucopia of information on sacred music because of some scheduling problems that I had my second year there. The program was new, and so of course they were the school and the Hancocks were always tweaking the requirements a little bit, so I was sort of odd man out one semester and couldn't get half of my requirements. So Jerry very graciously offered to combine two of them into one independent study class, and I met with him, I think, for an hour and a half or 2 hours every week that semester, and it was just really wonderful. I mean, of course, he was always wondering how everything was going in life and in our playing and in our professional work, too, as organists, but also we would plan services. And so, for example, I would plan a whole season of music according to the old Roman calendar, pre-1971. At his insistence, he said, you know, he didn't really have an interest in learning the new one, which was probably good from a planning perspective. It was a little fewer choices, but he always tasked us with going home, picking a service out, and then when we came back with it, then he would critique it. Well, it was always very interesting because you learned a lot about his ideas on service planning. He didn't like to mix genres a whole lot and was always, you know, for example, if we would program even a modern Latin motet of something, you know, by, say, the Stravinsky Ave Maria or something like that, and then, you know, somewhere else in the service we had a piece from, like, the Tudor school, and he would say, why? He was very interested in the integrity of a whole service, even, you know. So his love of form even extended to the liturgy. So many wonderful things like that with him.
You are listening to At the Organ.
We're talking with Bruce Ludwig, who is a student of Jerry Hancock's. Dr. Hancock passed away last week on January 21st. Bruce was talking about some of his experiences studying under him and Dr. Hancock's legacy.
One thing that I really thought was always funny, of course, everyone knows some of Jerry's one-liners, but I think his one of his favorites, which was not of his composition, was, you know, the old joke, how do you get to Carnegie Hall? Practice, practice, practice. And he would tell us that anytime we griped about not being up to snuff or not being Jerry Hancock or anything else, he would just say, well, you know how you got there. And it was clear from his own work, too. A lot of times we would go in for our 8 o'clock lessons, which were dictated by the schedule there. at UT of the performance organ, and he would have already been there practicing. One semester, I remember the Hindemith Kammermusik organ part. He was just playing at 7 in the morning, and I thought, this is unbelievable that there's a 70-plus-year-old in here practicing at 7 in the morning. But he was very committed to his art, and that came out in his teaching as well. I think there's a probably even a little bit of jealousy almost on the part of people like myself, because, you know, we only got to know him in the twilight of his life, and he certainly had not had very diminished skills in that time, but it was just, you know, everyone has different stages. And so, I think it's the first thing, obviously, is the tradition at St. Thomas, that program was really taken to new levels. And I didn't even realize till this week, when there's been a lot of reminiscence about his tenure there, that he had been asked in the wake of the Britain Festival in New York City to take up a residency, I think, in Westminster Abbey in London in 1980, which, you know, was pretty unheard of. I mean, after all, you have a lot of very good choirs of men and boys in England. Why go across the pond for one? So that was really something. And a testament, I think, to his artistry. He was very good in rehearsals always, because he could say one thing that would communicate totally different but complementary things to different ages and groups of people, which is really a gift. But, I think through all his workshops for AM or RCM or whatever he did, I mean, he touched a huge number of people at a very, you know, light level. You know, maybe they saw him for an hour in their lives. But the amazing thing about him was that even if he saw you for 5 minutes, he always had a very wonderful way of making you feel at home. And so I think that's been a tough thing after his passing for a lot of us who knew him a little better than that, is, you know, we wish that we could have known him his whole life, really, because of how wonderful he was for the short time we did know him. But I think that's his legacy. Fortunately, we have recordings of his improvisations and other things, which are really just priceless. And I mean, it's amazing to hear the technique and the form, and especially the mastery of canonic kind of forms. I think he was just incomparably good at that, the variety and skill of that. So, I mean, the legacies are just manifold. And hopefully they'll live on through his students for a very, very long time. He had a wonderful grasp of anything with imitation or canon, you know, all the techniques that are very challenging on the surface level to us. And this was really the reason why I had gone to Texas, was because I knew how good he was with form. And I knew that that was something that was really lacking in my improvisations. And so, you know, it was really wonderful to hear him improvise because of that. And he would take, you know, submitted themes and, you know, put one against another and this sort of thing very easily. But he also was, like all great improvisators, I think, was a real master of color. He knew how to use the instrument very well. I think when you listened to him, every time you'd hear something new. And, his other sort of famous statement was always, when in doubt, trill. But you didn't hear a lot of trilling. He always had everything so well planned. And that was obvious, because if you read his book or if you've ever had him in class, you know that counting how many measures were in a phrase or whatever was a huge part of what he did. And so, his improvisation showed that, although to the uninitiated, I guess people might not notice it because the music was so beautiful. But that was, I think, a sign of his greatness. One of the things he was very interested in was virtuosity. And you can hear that in anything he played, but not at the expense of the music itself. However, there were some times when we really thought, you know, he's got to be kidding. I remember in the fugue subject of the Wedge Prelude Fugue by Bach, he was having us carry the trill in all the parts of the fugue statement. And this was just awfully, there was a 4/5 trill and you're already playing fast he stuck with this for a long time. And then finally he said, well, you know, it's not really that important, I guess. But it was just, he was always interested in being a virtuosic performance and the audience being, kind of dazzled by the performer. There was something similar to that. I believe it was the Brahms G minor fugue, prelude and fugue that I played with him. There was some passage where there already was a fairly tricky part, and the voicing for the pedal was not very clear against what the manual was doing. And so he said, oh, well, let's just play it in octaves. And so, I mean, we were adding octaves, these sorts of things. So, I mean, it was there was no technical task that was too hard for him. He really was interested in the virtuosity. So, he was a great risk taker, I think, his performance, which is wonderful because no one wants to hear boring organ recitals. There are plenty of those already. So it was really helped some of us get out of our shell with virtuosity, and really a great gift of his as well. Of course, when I applied to UT, I was very excited to work with Jerry on improvisation. But because I'd already had very good training from my two previous teachers on repertoire. But it was to my, great delight that when I got there to UT, I really felt that I learned as much about interpretation from Jerry as anything else, because he loved the organ repertoire. You know, he wasn't just an improviser. He really had great insight into the structure of works in particular. And he was extremely insistent that we understand that as performers to illuminate our performances. Also, articulation was a huge focus of his. I never forget I had to write in all the articulations and all the fingering to the first trio sonata I played with him, which was it was interesting. But and he was really an exercise to make a mold and then break it, and it worked well. He was an excellent teacher, though, I think, in many ways, and was just wonderful to study with.
That's all for this week's show. We do plan to feature some more discussion about Jerry Hancock in the future. Until then, my name is Brent Johnson, and I'll meet you here next time at The Organ.
You've been listening to At The Organ, a weekly look at the art and music of the classical organ. We'd love to hear your comments about the show. Send your email to info@attheorgan.com, or just go to our website where you can comment on the show. There you can also hear this week's show again or find back episodes. The address is attheorgan.com. At The Organ is a production of the Organ Media Foundation. For more information about supporting the foundation or sponsoring an episode of At The Organ, go to organmedia.org. Thank you for listening, and we'll meet you here next week at The Organ.
Oh, I there was one thing. This is a very Jerry thing. He was asked to play and direct a choral evensong at one of the Episcopal churches in Austin. There were a number of us that were from UT chamber singers or from the organ studio, and I'll never forget. We did the Bairstow "Let All Mortal Flesh Keep Silence," and he began it in the wrong key. And I think it was either a half step or a whole step flat. Well, he played the whole piece in that key without any fail. It was really like the story you hear about Dupre, the cipher, and then you change keys to that. I mean, it was amazing. I would never forget that. We all kind of figured this out toward the end because the bass part is extremely low and we were really struggling. And so, of course, we later on had asked him about this, and he very, begrudgingly admitted that that was the case. And of course we were in awe, but that's just the kind of person that he was. He would never have made a big deal out of that because he didn't want the focus to be on him and on his abilities at all. So that was really a neat lesson too.